Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Blaine Prowse.
And I'm Jonathan Fraser.
On the Edible Valley Podcast, we will be exploring the food culture of the Comox Valley. We will be talking to chefs, farmers, producers, and food lovers from around the valley. Along the way, we will also touch on sustainability, food security, and simple living.
Well, today I guess we're just going on and we're going to step back and look at something we did earlier this summer. Actually, was it this summer or was it?
It was late? Last fall. Right around last the time fall. We got the idea for the doing this podcast.
The whole idea behind the whole podcast was, and we went out for a hike up here behind Cumberland to explore and forage for mushrooms.
Yeah, I've lived in Cumberland for about 7 years, and for probably about four of those, I've been every fall I go out and I'll pick chanterelle mushrooms, and so I have some pretty good hot spots out there, and so it was prime time. It was around Thanksgiving weekend, I think.
I think so.
And prime chanterelle time, and so John and I went out we hiked for about, I don't know, it was 8 kilometers or something.
I'm pretty sure it was a good hike. We're not going to say exactly where, because
we'd have to kill you.
We've got to keep the spots a little secret. And I know if anyone was to hear us talking about maybe their secret spots out there where they keep their chanterelles, we may be in a little bit of trouble here. So. Yeah,
that's for sure. And I don't like telling people my spots either.
No.
Because I tend to keep going to the same places and finding them year after year, so either I'm lucky or people just actually aren't really out there. They don't expect them to kind of be in their own backyard. Because I can walk out of my door and be in a spot that I can find enough mushrooms for dinner and be home in like 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty cool. And
they also grow back fairly fast, you know.
Yeah, the spot will keep reproducing. I think the thing about them growing out of their stem, if you cut it off in the ground, is kind of a wives' tale.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that one. It sort of cut the root. It's always nicer to sort of leave the ground a little nice and not rake it all up and stuff like that. So
yeah, it doesn't disturb the mycelium, which is the microscopic root of the mushroom.
Right.
That can cover hundreds of square meters in size for one actual mushroom plant, and the part that you pick is the fruit, and the rest of it lives underground, and it only fruits at certain times of the year. And so yeah, if you can cut it off at the ground rather than pulling it out, for one, it doesn't disturb the mycelium, and two, it keeps it from, if you pull it, lots of times you get lots of moss and needles and stuff that come up with it, so it makes it harder to clean, which is a time-consuming process. Yes. Sometimes.
That's always my biggest drawback to mushroom picking, especially in the restaurant buying mushrooms. If someone's like, oh, I just picked some mushrooms, and I'm like, I would like to see them before I actually buy them from you. And sitting there and picking pine needles and moss out is never a fun and enjoyable task in the kitchen, so try and shoot for the cleanest of clean is always preferred by chefs. So
you bring in 50 pounds of chanterelle mushrooms that somebody picked and fill a sink and start going, and you're there for hours and hours and hours
scrubbing the mud off there. Oh, so
yeah, can be quite tedious.
I think definitely in our experience, foraging for mushrooms is really based around chanterelle mushrooms. I mean, there's really two varieties out there. We have the whites and the golden ones that are...
Yeah, the whites and the yellows.
Whites and yellows as they are, as we're not really technical mushroom pickers. So yeah, we're more of adventurous folk who like to run out in the woods and find something delicious for dinner is where it all starts from. So
yeah, exactly. I started going when I was probably 5 or 6 of my grandpa. He took me out a few times. I remember being a young guy and he was telling me about where to look for them on stumps and this and that and the other thing, and that was pretty much my first experience. And so I mean, I've got 30 years experience picking chanterelles, so I have a pretty keen eye for them. But I mean, it's not a magic trick to find them either. They're pretty distinguished once you see them a bunch of times. You can see a mushroom from a pretty good distance and know if it's a chanterelle or another species that's mm-hmm. a similar color just by the shape.
Mm-hmm. They're definitely very distinct.
Yeah.
I know a lot of times I'm the worst mushroom picker. I get too distracted with the leaves and the branches. And I walk right over everything.
Yeah. A lot of people start that way.
So I like going with you, because I walk over and be like, oh, there's one there, and there's one there. Oh, look. Oh, there are mushrooms here. I can find one, yeah.
Yeah, when we went in October, I remember walking down the trail, and I was just pointing at the ground. And you were behind me, picking.
Yeah. I figured you went up the day before and actually picked out all these spots. I had make myself look good. And I went up there, and I'm like, oh my god, there's nothing here.
So. I'd been up there probably a week before and got, I don't know, probably close to 10 pounds. And in a new area that I hadn't tried out before. Mm-hmm. I went scouting and did really well. And I could tell by the terrain from riding my bike through there that it was going to be a good spot. And so hopefully, if it doesn't get logged this fall, I'll be back there picking again and reap the benefits of that.
Well, I did find the cauliflower mushroom up there, which you was did. a bit of excitement for me. So
yeah, cauliflower mushrooms are somewhat rare. I usually find one or two a season.
Yeah,
and I spend a lot of time out looking for mushrooms, and a cauliflower stands out because it's bright, brilliant white.
Yeah, and they're big. Well, usually they're quite big.
Yes, they can be quite big. So they're a delicacy. I enjoy it. They're hard to clean because there's so much, just the way they
how they grow. Grown.
Yeah,
it's they look like a big cauliflower bulb, but they come out of the pine needles.
Yeah. The way I've cooked them in the past by slicing them into about 1/2 inch thick strips. And frying them in hot and butter, and they get crispy like fritter. I call them a mushroom fritter.
Yeah.
They're really tasty.
I've done them in lasagnas and stuff like that, and soup, just cut them up. Like, they're nice. They have no shelf life. And I think that's why you never see them in restaurants or anything.
Yeah, and they don't last too long.
I think that one there, I cooked up half of it and left the other in the fridge, and a day later it was all shriveled up and pretty much gone, so...
Yeah, it's too bad. Chanterelles will last in the fridge for about a week, I think, if you wash them. And I put them in the crisper with newspaper around them, and that seems to keep them pretty well. They don't mush out, and they don't dry out.
It's pretty much the same way as you do with just regular mushrooms from the grocery store.
Right.
You know, keep them in a nice, something that has a little bit of air travel through it. But, like a paper bag or whatever. Plastic bag, they're going to turn into mush. But
never store mushrooms in a plastic bag.
Bad idea. Yeah. Get a nice big pool of slime in the end of the day. Yeah. So, as long as it can breathe,
you've
got something good there. So
natural transpiration.
Exactly.
That's a big word for you.
I'm not going to attempt that.
Try and spell it.
I'm out.
What else? Oyster mushrooms grow locally in the Comox Valley. I have picked them. In the spring, I found a couple of years ago, I found some out by the Puntland River growing on a rotting alder windfall.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't too thrilled with them. They didn't really have a lot of flavor.
I never say that oyster mushrooms have much flavor. Cooking in the restaurant, I use them quite a bit on a few things. It's more of a texture thing, I find, with them. They absorb flavors more than they actually give out to them.
Right.
I have them on my breakfast menu with polenta, roasted red pepper polenta. We got sautéed oyster mushrooms and leeks with the eggs and some goat cheese on top of it.
Oh, yeah.
So it blends together quite nice because you got lots of other strong flavors with the goat cheese and the roasted, the polenta and eggs and that. So, but yeah, they're not a strong, powerful mushroom. I'm not going to say all the chanterelles aren't as strong, powerful, but they don't have as much of a flavor as chanterelles. So.
Right.
Yeah.
In the next month or two, we could probably head out there and see if we can find some.
Actually, it probably would start.
It's a bit cold yet, but once it stops freezing overnight, I know exactly where to find them. So
it's just on either side of that frost.
Pretty much.
That's where you're going to pop out. So.
Yeah, and the oyster mushroom too. It will grow throughout the summer and into the fall if the conditions, it can be where it's coolish and moist, so near swamps, and that's why they like rotting alder, because it has a lot of moisture in it, so it can pull from that. And morel mushrooms are another species that I have picked, not in a great quantity. They do grow here.
I had a beautiful little patch under my mother-in-law's deck.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, until the father-in-law decided to remodel the house.
Oh, that's too bad.
But the two of us, we found them. She found them under there and was like, are those morels? And she's become quite an avid mushroom picker, but this was when she was first starting off picking mushrooms.
Yeah.
And she's like, are those morels? And she's like, I'm not too sure. And she brought me in. And they were humongous. Oh, like, nice. It was just enormous morels under there. And I'm like, I've never seen mushrooms that big, like morels that big.
So, yeah.
So the two of us were just humming and hawing. Do we eat? Are they edible? Are they not? So we're pulling out the books and we're like, oh, they're good.
Yeah. Yeah, morels are delicious. The first time I remember finding them was I had been reading about them, and I got a spot in my mind where I kind of knew that sort of soil existed. Mm-hmm. It was disturbed soil. Generally, they like an area that's been burned, a forest fire. They really can sprout up.
Oh, yeah.
But this was just disturbed soil with some grass around and stuff like that. And so I went to the exact spot that I had in my head, and sure enough, I found them
right there.
And it was about probably around this time of year. I think it was Easter weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that I did find them there. So I should probably get down there in the next few days and see.
Definitely.
Because they could be there. But again, the weather's been so unseasonal, it's hard to say what's
happening out there. It's really wet, so.
Yeah, wet and cold.
Any mushrooms that are out there are going to be a little bit on the soggy side right now, so.
Yeah.
Which is a little too bad.
But their flavor of the couple that I did eat are. It's. Second to none.
I love sautéing morels. I mean, just a little touch of cream or whatever.
They don't need
just
much.
A nudge. Yeah.
Like, I think I just sautéed again in butter and that was it. And
yeah. I like to come up with all these great recipes for mushrooms, but at the end of the day, I think I just like the natural.
Yeah.
And I kind of like matching. I like matching the mushrooms around here just with the vegetable or the what's around here as well. You know. I'm a big fan of chanterelle mushrooms and salmon here.
Yeah. I think they're
Even though mushrooms and fish aren't always a good connection, I just mixing those two together is always a delicious treat for me. So.
Yeah, I often will make, I'll bake a piece of sockeye because I think sockeye is the best. And but it works with other kinds of salmon too. And I'll take the chanterelles, cut them up and saute them with butter, and then I add soy sauce and honey to them once they've cooked down a bunch.
Yeah.
And then so they caramelize and really sweet, just a little bit of a salt tang to them.
Right.
And then I'll put that with my salmon and eat them together, and it's just amazing how good they go together.
Oh yeah, for sure. Even though most mushrooms are sort of, and fish are not a big one, but
I wouldn't do it with a regular button mushroom or anything from the grocery store, but a chanterelle prepared that way, it just, and you can add some garlic to that too, of course. Oh,
yeah, for sure. But yeah, delicious. As in all the mushrooms around here, I mean, I think I can't think of one that doesn't go with chicken or pork, or you know, even with beef, just doing a nice hearty sauce up with, you know, nice sauteed mushrooms in it, nice jus.
Yeah,
they're just beautiful on top of. So
yeah, I know, it's such a great hobby too. Because it gets you outside, it gets you looking around at not just the mushrooms, but you start looking at the soil and the understory of the trees and the different mosses, and you know, it creates a whole new appreciation for the forest and what is in the forest. And
I like being out there, and it's one of those things is when you're out there, you're not hiking hard. You're out there and you're really treading softly because you don't want to wreck anything under there. And of course, you trip over the occasional stump and fall down the odd hill.
Yeah.
Which always seems to happen.
Yeah.
But I usually find when I wind up in those disasters that I'm right in a patch of chanterelles or whatever I've been looking
it
for.
It was meant to be.
It was a... Coming out. falling on your face and standing up and going, Chandra?
Yeah.
Not so bad.
That reminds me of probably the first time you and I went together. One of the first times back when we were working in the Kingfisher.
Oh, right.
And our chef at the time, he said, oh, it's the time of the year. You guys should go out, pick mushrooms, make some extra money, and I'll buy them off you for whatever, $3 mm-hmm. a pound or something. He said, I'll give you a little bit better than the buyers will do. Okay, so we got up early one morning, we headed out, and we're not, at the time, we weren't much for morning because we would stay up late every night drinking beer and trying to figure out all the world's problems at Garden Beach.
Sorting out the life, yeah, everything there.
And so we headed out at first light and drove into an area up behind Union Bay, which is in the southern side of the Comox Valley, into an area that's now all logged and not a mushroom to be found in there now, mm-hmm. but at the time it was pretty good back there, so we set off and we got, I don't know, I can't remember how much we picked. We probably made 15 or 20 bucks each. Nothing great.
So we're like, hey, a case of beer.
Yeah, that's about it.
We'll split a case of beer.
Yeah. And so we get back there and the chef takes them and dumps them out and he's looking through them and he's like, that's not a chanterelle. That one's poisonous. And I said, oh, that one must have came out of John's bag.
So I think we argued that for a while. Yeah. That was you. That was definitely you. Yeah. It wasn't me. Yeah.
Tom harassed. I'm pretty sure I remember him harassing you quite heavily about it.
Yeah.
John, you're trying to kill people. But it was a tiny one, but it looked like it could have been a chanterelle. It was bright orange.
Yeah. I'm like, what do you expect? You got up at 6 in the morning. I only had half a coffee in me. Like, come on.
Yeah. And we were up until midnight planning our mushroom picking trip.
Exactly.
So, yeah, not too much for, yeah, it was fun though.
I think that's where I learned most of my adventures in chanterelles was at the Kingfisher.
Yeah.
Because we used to get a lot of mushrooms in through there, and then I think we sold some over to Vancouver to some of Lucas's friends and
oh,
stuff.
Right, yeah.
I can't remember how that all rolled out, but I remember always having 200 or 300 pounds of chanterelle mushrooms coming in the back door and having to clean them and box them and
oh, man.
Freeze them, and every other misadventure with a mushroom, I think we got to take place slicing and dicing. And
yeah, so many mushrooms. But, the white chanterelle is, I find, more plentiful than the yellows in the places I pick.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that they're usually bigger and they taste just as good to me. So I don't know what, I guess the whole thing with the yellow is it looks better.
I think there is a bit more stronger flavor to the yellows. But it's not a huge overpowering taste as you might think. It also depends on how the other ones have grown too. So
right.
And what you're doing with them.
We were just saying that John lost his train of thought because he put his cup down and he thought I made a big bang, so we stopped recording there for a sec. So it sounds a bit weird. That's what happened.
As in, we're just working. We're just learning.
Learning, yeah.
We're getting better.
Fine. Nothing bad happened.
You probably don't even know because we just stopped for 2 seconds.
Yeah. But so, if we wanted to, before we got into this too far, you got some crazy ideas, please don't go picking wild mushrooms unless you've done a ton of research or been shown by somebody who knows their stuff, because you can get very ill if you eat the wrong species and potentially fatal illness.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So yeah, use extreme caution. I don't recommend anyone just go out there and start picking and even going by a guidebook, because they can look so different than what your picture in your guidebook's going to be. Every guidebook's going to have a picture of a mushroom that looks a little different, and this is just no way. The only way to really learn is through experience.
There's some mushrooms that are, I'm still picking mushrooms out there, and I'll pick one up and I'll be like, I'm pretty sure this is a chanterelle, but just to be safe,
yeah,
I'll throw it to the side. It comes, it's that one mushroom, nothing else is around, and it's got the right shape, but something just doesn't look quite right. So I'm always a little hesitant with mushrooms unless it's something I know.
Right. That's good, though. That's...
But, and that's what I think everyone should take an eye at, because there's nothing worse than getting your stomach pumped.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever had to experience it, but it's...
Neither have I, and I don't ever want to. I remember a couple of years ago now, I was coming back from picking, and I had a good sack, and I ran into a couple that were looking, poking around in the woods close here, close to home, and... So I showed them what was in my bag. I'm like, ooh, wow, look at all those. And then I looked in their bag, and I went, that's not chanterelles. What? No, those aren't chanterelles. Not like any chanterelles I've ever seen. Oh, I said, yeah, I would get rid of those right now, because, yeah, I wouldn't eat those.
Yeah.
And they didn't even thank me or anything. They just kept going about their way, and so I don't know what they were up to, but it kind of made me scared, like, I could have saved those people a lot of discomfort, but
right.
I hope they didn't eat them.
Right.
So, but anyways, that's kind of our chat about foraging for wild mushrooms. It's a huge, huge hobby. Like, so much to learn and so much to discover.
I'm just amazed at how many books are out there about mushroom picking and the difference in mushrooms and stuff. It's a whole industry in its own.
Like the Mushrooms Demystified book by David Arora that you were looking at?
Yeah, I was flipping through that. It's great. There's a lot of names I can't pronounce.
The book's about 3 inches thick.
Yeah, but thousands of mushrooms in there. It's amazing how many are out there. Different varieties, and some good, some bad.
Yeah, some ugly, some pretty, but they're all interesting.
Yeah. And we have a large amount out there, and there's a large variety. I mean, you got the chanterelles, oysters out there. We're talking about morels. We didn't even talk about pine mushrooms, which are out there. It's a huge market for pine mushrooms. They're definitely sought after.
Yeah, the Asian community just strives to get those, and people pick and make good money with them.
Yeah. Lobster mushrooms, those are not a mushroom.
Yeah, it's a parasite that attaches itself to another mushroom that makes it red and it changes its flavor. And I was leery about them because I was told you couldn't identify the mushroom underneath, so you shouldn't pick them. But a reliable source told me that on Vancouver Island they grow on a harmless mushroom that doesn't really have any flavor. So he says they're safe. I'm unsure still, but...
Yeah.
Anyways, I know what they look like, and I have found some, but...
One day.
Yeah, I love to take pictures. Yeah. Macro photography of mushrooms is one thing I really love doing, so I just take lots of pictures of them,
yeah.
Even if I don't know they are.
Take them back, get someone to look at them, and next time you go out there, maybe you can try them.
Right? Yeah, so. Definitely.
Especially going around your first few times just with a camera, take a couple shots and make sure you know what you're getting into. And
that's right, yeah.
And it's fun being out in the woods, you know?
Get lost. It's great. And it's great for kids too. I've been taking my daughter out since she was probably 4, and so she has an eye for what a chanterelle is now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got her own pocket knife, and I can trust that she will pick the right thing. She, mm-hmm. you know, she always asks me, and I always go through them. But you know, she hasn't picked anything that wasn't a chanterelle yet. So,
yeah. I mean, there are lots of places you can pick, and lots of places you can't pick. So. It's always good to, as we're saying, do your research, check in with people, and make sure it's okay to pick. If you're on someone's private property, or whether you're in a provincial park or whatever, yeah. There are rules about that. So,
for sure,
definitely check into it. Make sure you're okay when you're doing that stuff.
Yeah, you don't want to get in trouble, fined, and plus disturbing the natural beauty of a place that's supposed to be there for natural beauty.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, so that's about it for that. Do you have anything else to add?
Well, I just wanted to give a little shout out this weekend. The North Vancouver Island Chefs Association did a fundraising dinner it's a fundraiser for the Canadian Culinary Federation, so sort of our larger group, the CCFCC. Basically, we're doing did a pasta day fundraiser. So they went to a locals restaurant. They booked out the whole restaurant and did a, they called it a family style Italian dinner. So they did a 4-course dinner with, you know, salad, mussels, as an appy. Then they did, and it was all on platters.
Nice.
a nice pasta and a tomato and sausage on it. Mm-hmm. And then they had a nice espresso chocolate cake, I think, was the to finish that all off. So it was a great deal. It was $25. They did a 50-50 draw. cookbook draw was there. So, yeah, it was a huge success. I think it had 72 people there in total, nice. Which is a good...
Good show.
So it sounds like it's something they want to do again. The money is going into actually the to help start a program with the CCFCC where they want to start doing a bit more mentoring with junior chefs. So right now there's an opportunity for a junior chef, which is someone who's working on an apprenticeship or just in a culinary school at the moment, to get 2 weeks work experience in Kelowna right now. And so it's all paid, all expense paid trip to Kelowna. I hope it's Kelowna. And it's the interior. And they'll get to work alongside some of the chefs in the interior there. So I think that's a great opportunity for some young upcoming chefs in Canada.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing comes from they want to sort of get Canada's a large country, so they want to get a little bit get people experience from a little bit of each sides and show them that, you know, this is how they cook on the East Coast, this is how we cook on the West Coast, and right. maybe we can infuse that to create more of a Canadian style of cooking. So
that's a good idea. Yeah, because there really isn't much of a Canadian cuisine. It's everything from all over the rest of the world.
Poutine and pancakes and maple syrup. Yeah.
But you don't think of it, you know, as so much of a East Coast, West Coast, Canada thing. You think more of a, the West Coast is more known for fusion cuisine and Asian and Indian probably and things like that. And I mean, I don't know, I've never been back East, so I don't know what it's like there, but
I'm going to have to say a lot of seafood, you
yeah.
know? But I mean, there's complete different changes. You know, you got, it's a huge country when you think of what they're doing in Alberta compared to what they're doing in Montreal to what they're doing in Nova Scotia. So you know, and definitely going with the local influence that a lot of chefs are taking on. It's nice to get that influence from across the country. So.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good idea. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, on Saturday I was in Campbell River. And we were looking at puppies, and so that was quite an adventure.
Nothing to do with food.
13 puppies in it. Yeah, it was crazy. Anyways, but it was kind of fun. And after that, we went to a restaurant called Baba Ganoush on, what's that street called? It's slipping my mind right now.
In Campbell,
I think
River?
It's Mirrorcroft Village where it's at. And anyways, it's Syrian and Lebanese food. So you get flatbreads and tzatziki sauce and falafel and that kind of stuff. And it's really tasty. So if you're in Campbell River, check out Baba Ganoush. And on our way home, I needed honey. So we stopped in Black Creek at the Big D's Bees and Coastal Black Winery. And I picked up a bucket of honey. And my girlfriend got a bottle of wine. And she had a sample in their beautiful tasting room. I didn't know that. You know, I'd never been there, so what an impressive place they have out there. It's a converted cow barn, and they just turned into this beautiful tasting room.
And the big news coming up there will be the North Vancouver Island picnic, which North Island College and the North Vancouver Island Chefs Association are joining together to do it's going to be called Flavor, and it's going to be a Feast of Fields idea.
Right.
So it's just in the planning stages, but it's sounds like it's a go for September 23rd, I believe.
I think so, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be, that's going to change that place pretty crazy with over 40 vendors and chefs out there cooking and preparing local foods and giving a sampler for everyone to go to. So
they're just in the stages of building a big patio out front of the tasting room there. So I guess that's in preparation for that event.
And there'll be tents up there and food galore.
Yeah,
I believe you pick up a plate and You got 40 little appetizers to sample from.
Wow.
So
I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
I definitely think Edible Valley needs to be there.
Definitely. Talking to everyone and seeing how. Yeah. I'll be manning a booth. I'll probably be manning two booths. Knowing how things go for me there.
Yeah, John will be running around like a crazy person. I'll just wander around and eat and talk to people.
Yes, so, but it'll be a fun time.
So if you get an iPhone stuck in your face and some guy asking you questions, that'll be me. And then after all that, I went to Bisque Restaurant on 14th Street in Courtney and had a nice meal there with my girlfriend for her birthday. And we'd never been to that establishment before, mm-hmm. so it was, yeah, we quite enjoyed it. And it was, it's a nice small atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, good food, and we had
good local West Coast food. I think that's there.
Yeah, there. I had a Hunter Schnitzel, and she had butternut squash ravioli.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that was good. So maybe we'll get in there and chat with them at some point. I didn't network all weekend, but I just was out looking around.
Out exploring.
So. Yeah.
Yes.
That was good. Well, so I guess that...
Well, I was going to say, I did actually get out for lunch too today.
Oh, so, did you?
Yes.
Oh, I'm wrapping this too early.
You wrapped it up too early because you're talking about food and I talked about good meals. And I went to the Saigon Noodle House.
Nice.
Today. It was my first time bringing my daughter in there.
Oh, yeah.
Which was an interesting experience because she didn't want to go in there because she didn't quite understand. She wanted to go to... I think she wanted to go to White Spot.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to happen. So, so we enjoyed a couple 14 C's with the vermicelli noodles and the lemongrass beef on there.
It was, oh, yeah.
Delicious. It's always good. I mean, it's fast. It's good.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I've still actually never been.
You should try it out.
Yeah.
I definitely.
I should.
There's too many restaurants, so we got to get out there and explore them all. So.
Yeah, well, that's why we went to Bisque, because we were trying to think of where to go. You know, we have our standbys like the Atlas, where John works, and Union Street Grill, which is on 5th Street. Yeah, there's a few other places that we've been several times. We thought, well, let's try something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was worth it.
It's always nice to get out and explore the little independent places and
yeah,
see what they're cooking out there. So
yeah, it was great. Okay, well, I guess that wraps up the Edible Valley for this week.
This week, and we'll be coming to you again next week, hopefully.
Yeah.
If everything works out.
And, John doesn't get called into work.
Cross my fingers.
Happy Easter, everyone, and take care.
We'll talk
to you soon.
Good night. Bye.